Yeah. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Hey.
Well, welcome to A Course in Miracles.
Thank you.
The section what we're studying now, it's calling you to upgrade, maybe even, or to take some responsibility for your thinking, but certainly to upgrade the purpose of your spiritual search, to upgrade perhaps, to even admit that you've been, I don't know, taking the easy way? Is that what it is? To take the easy way, to stay in the body, stay separate, to just go for happiness. Isn't that enough? Just go for happiness. Why would you want any more? Maybe that's the route you've been taking. You're saying that's good enough. If I'm just happier today than I was yesterday, that's all I care about. Maybe that's what you've been doing. This section in Course in Miracles is going deeper. And it's, you know that this book tells you that what you think is happiness is actually just another form of misery. Because it's based on a lie. Separation. The world and time and space. It's this adventure that you've gone on, but it has led you to false love. False happiness. Not for a bad reason. That's why it continues to exist. It's innocent. And there's some really wonderful outcomes yet to be harvested from this fantastic use of mind. However, in all this time, you've managed to get yourself into a corner. In all your efforts to experience separation, you've used your power to not know unity. To not know. We say God, it's just this most vague thing. If I say love, that also, quite a vague thing. They must be out of focus. Love, God. Anything absolute must be out of focus in order for you to live in the world of specifics. And you've done it. You've got yourself into a world of specifics. It's not a sin. It's not a problem. Except that in your efforts, you've got yourself into a corner where the actual thing that you're pursuing, love, has been excluded. And its substitute, small L love, special love, has become now an addiction. It's overshadowing your light. It's impossible you can keep it up. It takes too much energy. And so your spiritual path was begun under this need for love, need for understanding, need for embrace rather than divide. This is the truth of you. It's from where you came. Unity. Sharing, real sharing. Life, real life. You've made substitutes for these things. So in the section that we're studying right now, it's called the last unanswered question. Unanswered question. It's simply this, and this is what we'll spend a couple of minutes just thinking about for just a few minutes. Do you want to know what you have denied. Now, what you have denied, of course, is the absolute. It's the truth. It's anything to do with eternity. This is what you've denied. There's no question. Do you want to know what you have denied? Here's the key word, because. The reason why you would want to know what you've denied must not be just to be happy or just to be wise or to be studied or have some spiritual success. Nope, 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 nope. Your orientation must be you want to know what you have denied because it is the truth. So let's sit with that for just a few minutes. Bing! You see, the challenge here is you do not know the truth. And the question is, would you deliver yourself to the truth anyway? Not knowing what it is. Not knowing what it means. Is the truth, whatever the truth is, does that interest you enough for you to jump off the cliff to get it? You see, you have to not care the outcome. You cannot know it. You, who would undo? You cannot know the outcome from where you are of choosing the truth. You know the outcome of choosing the illusion. You're living it. Is there something in you? Can you arrive or sense or know or love the idea that you'd rather have the truth, the eternal truth, to become aware of what you actually are? No matter what. Bing. Bing. Welcome back to the meeting. Does anybody want to share the idea of choosing the truth no matter what? Albert?
My first thought was the statement, seek ye the truth and the truth will set you free. I believe the most important attributes of God are love and truth. These are the only things of value in our life, not money, not human power. So on the last day of my life, you know, if I ask myself, how did I do, it'll be on the scale of those two items that I think I will measure myself. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I do want to know the truth. And besides that, we know that God is love and truth. So why wouldn't I want to know more about what it is and how to achieve these things, not on a superficial level, but on a real level?
And sooner than later.
Now is all there is.
Now would do. Yeah. That sounds like a man who is on the path. To let go of the needless suffering that comes with the addiction to time and space and bodies and jealousy and guilt and anger. and worry, needless suffering around these things that were all stirred into the dream of living as an ego. Indeed. Marion.
Hi.
Hi, Marion.
Hi. Well, first, the answer to the question was, of course, yes. And it was because that will give me a very peace. You know, I felt just peace and love in my heart. And I, boy, knowing the truth just sets you free of so many other things. But then I thought of, there was an interview today in the Sentinel about an author that wrote a book. It's called Prophet Against Slavery. And it was about a man, Benjamin Lay, back in the 1700s, that was a Quaker, but it was before the Quakers even were against slavery. And wow. The struggles of his life, trying to convince people that slavery was wrong, and knowing that, you know, it was a huge generational journey, right, for us all to kind of get to that place. But he must have, no matter what trials and tribulations he went through, probably felt a very calm peace of knowing the truth, that this is wrong. Mm. And so we all believe that we have to treat each other with good humanity. We wouldn't all get to where we want to be.
That was driven Eve to go against all the economic benefits and the social norms, and that to get to what his heart was telling him needs to happen. Yeah. Driven by something to make it right, to make it more loving, more. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Anybody else? Luann. Hold on, I got your mute. Okay, now start over.
I went through a series of thoughts. You said, would you be willing to jump over the cliff? And I said, well, I don't know what the cliff is, so I can't answer that. And then I said a few other things. And then the last thing I came up with is, what I want is based on wanting to be at one with everyone, loving with the love as God created me. That's what I want.
The funny thing about the truth, you said, as God created you, that if God created you a certain way, mm-hmm. you are that way.
That's right.
Forever.
It's in me. I know it's in me.
Yes.
I know I'm capable of it.
Yes.
I'm addicted.
What's interesting is that you have had to deny the truth about yourself in order to seek God, seek love, in order to know fear. These are impossible things in heaven, in knowledge. They're impossible. For you to experience those, you had to deny very specifically love, unity, God, truth, sharing. You also had to deny creation, by the way. You had to get out of the creation. You had to get out of your own inheritance. Add joy to the list. You see, true joy cannot be afforded by ones who are selective about what makes them happy. This is a game you're playing. You had to let a lot of these things, you had to block these things in order to get to where you are now in the body. The funny thing about the truth is that it's still true. The truth, as God created you, you are still as God created you.
So I guess my purpose then is to do the unblocking. The book keeps saying we all need to do.
Yeah. That's why this sentence... It's cleverly written, this sentence, and we'll see it tonight in print again, is, do I want to know what I have denied because it is the truth. Course in Miracles calling you out. It's not saying you have to learn something, you have to achieve something, you have to earn something, you have to get lucky. None of that.
I might have not said that, but that's what I meant.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, good, good. Kenny, I got your mute. Hang on a second. Got it. Okay.
Thanks. So what I came up with was that so first I'm a happy guy. And then sometimes I will give up what I really want to get connection from somebody else that I don't get. So I have to watch how I do that. So, you remember when we were over in Willow Glen with Gary Renard?
Yeah.
And I asked you, how do I do A Course in Miracles in business? Mm-hmm. And you said something like to ask for what you want and look for peace in myself and hire the attorney and go get your money. So it took me a while, and I was in a fog and making myself ashamed until Bridget and I said, okay, it's time to go see the attorney. And it starts to fall in place then. I find more peace because I'm asking somebody for help, and they get to go out in the world and do the battle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and you're being honest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The confusion, the hesitation, the suffering that goes with being in between is a form of dishonesty. Did you know the Course calls depression basically because you have not made up your mind?
Yeah. Right.
You're not getting what you want. Mm-hmm. You're getting
it really finds peace when I go like, oh, I know what I want. Yeah, I know what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's amazing is when you get to the state of clarity and you pursue it, and your head starts to clear, your purpose starts to fill up, you start to hear the guidance do the things you. And your chaos in your life starts to lower. Your depression goes away. Even if it's difficult, even if hard things come, you have a clarity about you and an honesty. See,
yeah,
there's a lesson there, and it's printed out for you in a wonderful sentence in the Manual for Teachers, page 11. Let's go there. We haven't been there in a long time.
I wanted to say something about what Kenny was saying.
Oh, yeah.
Kenny, what you just said, explain to me. I've often wondered how Andrew could call the police to come and get the car off of his property and feel okay about it. And what you just said explains it to me. He wanted peace, and he was going to stay peaceful and let somebody else do the work.
Yeah, that's when I called the police. Yeah, they got the power. They got the gun and the handcuffs.
Right. I've often wondered exactly how he stayed peaceful doing that. And it was that doing that brought peace or kept him in peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a matter of honesty and a matter of stepping back and making sure I don't do it out of attack. See,
right, yeah.
If honest is not an attack, and it's honestly what I believe is the best for all people involved, it's no problem. Even though it means somebody who's going to go away in handcuffs, I'm doing my part to the best. Not out of attack. See, you know when it's an attack. You know when you're thinking and acting out of attack. There's anger in there. There's a little fear. There's a little attachment to the outcome. If I attack and then I'll get this. You know what attack feels like.
That reminds me of when I was divorcing my husband, or he was divorcing me. His lawyer called my lawyer and said, you need to hurry up and sign these papers I sent you. And my ex-husband said to me, you need to tell your lawyer to sign it. So I went to my lawyer and told him, you know, what I heard. And he says, I'm not going to sign it. You're not ready for this divorce yet. It felt so good. But then I got to thinking later, why did I do push that way in the first place? And I realized it was because I was afraid of what was going to happen to me if I didn't do what my ex-husband wanted me to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Fear. Yeah, Susan Sundari.
I didn't want to cut off this part of the conversation, but I just wanted to respond to, you know, the meditation.
Oh, please.
Wow. That was worth more to me than, I mean, that was like the whole meeting for me. I'd forgotten that as soon as you said the word truth, I was just in tears. Because for, I would say, my first 20 years, you know, on the path, that was my word. I mean, that was like, that was why I went into science. I thought, oh, I'm going to figure out the truth. I'm going to be a scientist. And it didn't take me long to realize that that wasn't going to get me to the truth. And I mean, after stuff started going like really, really awry in life, then I got into my first spiritual group was called SAT, SAT, which stood for Seekers After Truth. And it's a pun, too. As I went along my way, I got on an Indian path and got Shaktipat listening to a lecture on Sat, the Sanskrit word Sat this time, which stands for Satchitananda, Sat being truth, that which is as it is, and Chit being the light of consciousness that illuminates that truth, and Ananda being the bliss of all that. And it was just like I was just in tears the whole meditation, because I don't know when the last time is that I've realized that that is and always was my goal. You know, like I've gotten lost in other thought patterns.
Mm-hmm.
It just brought me back to my origin.
Nice, Indari. Nice.
And Andrew, then I spent the rest of the time there's story here in Idria Shah's Thinkers of the East, Teachings of the Dervishes, called The Land of Truth, which is exactly what you were saying, but it's a page and a three quarters, and I'm wondering if I could read it, or if you don't want me to, if I'll send it, maybe you could send it to the group.
All right, why don't you start reading it, and then I'll stop you if it isn't rolling, if this isn't what I think it is.
I think it's exactly what it's going to end up with.
Okay, go for it.
A certain man believed that the ordinary waking life as people know it could not possibly be complete. He sought the real teacher of the age. He read many books and joined many circles, and he heard the words and witnessed the deeds of one master after another. He carried out the commands and the spiritual exercises, which seemed to him to be the most attractive. He became elated with some of his experiences. At other times, he was confused, and he had no idea at all of what his stage was or where and when the search might end. This man was reviewing his behavior one day when he suddenly found himself in the house of a certain sage of high repute. In the garden of that house, he encountered Keter, the secret guide who shows the way to truth. Keter took him to a place where he saw people in great distress and woe, and he asked, who were they? We are those who did not follow real teachings, who were not true to our undertakings, who revered self-appointed teachers, they said. Then the man, is somebody not muted? Then the man was taken by a place where everyone was attractive and full of joy. He asked who they were. We are those who did not follow the real signs of the way, they said. But if you have ignored the signs, how can you be happy? Asked the traveler. Because we chose happiness instead of truth, said the people. Just as those who chose the self-appointed chose also misery. But is happiness not the ideal of a man? Asked the man. The goal of man is truth. Truth is more than happiness. The man who has truth can have whatever mood he wishes, or none, they told him. We have pretended that truth is happiness and happiness truth, and the people have believed us. Therefore, you too have until now imagined that happiness must be the same as truth. But happiness makes you its prisoner, as does woe. Then the man found himself back in the garden with Keter beside him. I will grant you one desire, said Keter. I wish to know why I have failed in my search and how I can succeed in it, said the man. You have all but wasted your life, said Keter, because you have been a liar. Your lie has been in seeking personal gratification when you could have been seeking truth. And yet I came to the point where I found you, said the man, and that is something which happens to hardly anyone at all. And you met me, said Keter, because you had sufficient sincerity to desire truth for its own sake, just for an instant. It was that sincerity in that single instant which made me answer your call. Now the man felt an overwhelming desire to find truth, even if he lost himself. Keter, however, was starting to walk away, and the man ran after him. You may not follow me, said Keter, because I am returning to the ordinary world, the world of lies, for that is where I have to be if I am to do my work. And when the man looked around him again, he realized he was no longer in the garden of the sage, but standing in the land of truth.
Sundari is perfect. Thank you. Beautiful. Really great. Thank you. Indeed. That's a funny thing. The truth must be sought without attachment to its outcome. You bet, of course, as soon as you deliver yourself to the light and to the warmth of the truth, it is self-sustaining and it's all good. However, the choice, I love your story, Sundari, that was really perfect. You have to recognize the choice to let go of your substitute happiness, for example, as you know it. That'd be quite scary. Be a little frightening because you're giving up, you know, it's like somebody giving up a drug. It's at least they know if they take their drug, they can be happy for a little while before they pass out and fall off their chair. At least they can take the drug to get sugar, heroin, alcohol, whatever drug. You're taking a drug too with your ego. And you think you know what to do next. If you could just be somehow wealthier or healthier or wiser or have better friends or more luck, then it would all be good. You're just taking a drug, just like any other drug. You would have to be willing to give up even what you now know as happiness. Wow! Are you ready for that? I love your story, Sundari. That was absolutely perfect. Yes. Okay. Yes, Dom, we can talk later. So, let's take a look at, first we're going to finish up with my comment with Kenny. Because, you know, what we're doing here is a form of honesty. If you are of love, if you are actually driven toward joy, if you actually are a creator, as the Course says you are, then the only way you will be happy is in joy and love creating and sharing. This is the only way you'll actually find your completion and your life. So that means you have to be honest. Check out how Course in Miracles defines honesty on page 11 in the Manual for Teachers. Bottom of the page, page 11. Are you there, Don?
Yes.
Would you read for us that paragraph, starting honesty?
Page 11, the manual for... Oh, wait, I'm on the process of psychotherapy. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess I wasn't there.
The previous section is section one in this wonderful characteristics of the teachers of God. And it's all describing trust and the development of trust and a stair step of your awakening to actually gain trust in something that's beyond your own ego. Don, go ahead.
Okay. Honesty. All other traits of God's teachers rest on trust. Once that has been achieved, the others cannot fail to follow. Only the trusting can afford honesty, for only they can see its value. Excuse me, I need to stop video for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Chris. Honesty does not apply only to what you say. The term actually means consistency. There is nothing you say that contradicts what you think or do. No thought opposes any other thought. No act belies your word, and no word lacks agreement with another. Such are the truly honest. At no level are they in conflict with themselves. Therefore, it is impossible for them to be in conflict with anyone or anything.
Whoa. I want to call your attention to this on page 11, the sentence 5, the term actually means consistency. And then he explains, he says, there's nothing you say that contradicts what you think or do. No thought opposes any other thought. No thoughts are competing. No act belies your word. What you say, you do. What you're doing is what you said. And it's what you thought. What alignment is that? No word lacks agreement with another. Consistency. Imagine spending one day where you're completely in alignment with what you're thinking, speaking, and doing. Completely. It's just simple. You're staying so simple that you don't say anything you weren't actually thinking, and what you do say reflects what you were thinking clearly, and then what you do follows. Imagine a whole day like that. Such alignment, such consistency, no chaos, honesty. Imagine that. This would be a superpower, but boy, you could not possibly do it without fear unless you had trust. And you cannot have trust until you have found some way to actually abide in truth, and even only for a minute. Barbara.
So isn't that what doing this course is? I mean, you know, to me that, and do I want to see what I denied? Because it is the truth. That's why you do the lessons and allow it to happen at the pace that the course asks you to do it at. And I mean, the way I'm approaching it now is that it's my work, but it's joyful work. You know, it's not like a job, but it's joyful work.
It has benefits.
Yeah, and the joyful work is being undone slowly. And that the benefits come slowly, but the benefits build, you know, lesson by lesson. And so, and it's in pursuit of the truth. It's answering that question that you do it for.
Yeah.
And it happens if you show up for it. Mm-hmm. And I just find that the less I think about it, the less that it's located here, and the more I enter it. You know how the Buddhists talk about stream entry? You know, that you enter the stream of, and I'm just not that well versed in the whole thing, but there's this process called stream entry. Okay. Where you are developing your meditation and your mindfulness and all of that in Buddhism. Well, it feels like that to me, is that because now I'm on lesson 178, which is a review, part of a review. And it just feels like it's an experience rather than a study. Does that make sense?
Yes. You know, they're also in Zen, they talk about devotion.
Uh-huh. Yes.
As a way to describe sort of, yes, your surrendering to the truth and, yes, all in. Another philosopher I studied for a little while, his term was, throw your pack over the wall. You'll climb that wall because everything you need is in your pack, and you just threw it over the wall. Find a way.
Right. And you know, literally that word devotion, there are words that sort of float to the surface. And devotion has been one of those that has floated to the surface. It feels like a devotional practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it is to answer that question, that unanswered question.
Yeah.
It is in pursuit of the truth. And, you know, it's just taking it a day at a time, mm-hmm, and a lesson at a time in a devotional, open, joyful work kind of way.
Yeah. When this path, this devotion to truth, becomes your honest pursuit, if it's just, even though there may be difficulties and people think you're a nut, and maybe a few pages of A Course in Miracles and say, what are you doing? Doesn't matter, right? Because you're delivering yourself now to this awakening that is paying very, very personal benefits.
And happiness, that just kind of falls away. It's not about happiness.
Happiness is cheap.
Yeah.
Happiness is a drug.
Yeah. And it falls away.
Falls away. Very good. Very good, Barbara. Nothing wrong with happiness. It's just, it's a cheap thrill compared to a holy instant.
Right. Right.
I'll take one instant of holiness versus hours of happiness. It will just leave.
Right. It's an exciting process.
It's very exciting, very personal, very exciting. Ross, what do you got?
What comes up for me is that the good news is it's inevitable. Bad news is it's 100%. There's no grading this process. You either have to get it 100%, like what we're talking about, that consistency, honesty is consistency. but only if it's 100%. But that's the bad news. The good news is it's inevitable. Take your time, because you're going to have to get it 100% correct. In other words, you have to link the holy instance one after another with no break. That's enlightenment. You have to link honesty together 100%, or nope, sorry, try again. That's the bad news. The good news is it's inevitable.
There's no 99%. Very good, Ross. Beautiful.
But the course links it together for you. It's like the perfect curriculum.
Well,
it's linking them together one by one.
Yes and no. You have to be vigilant.
Right.
It's undoing, but your part is the undoing. You have to stop 100% of what you're doing. You can't stop 99% and then go, well, I'm just going to take an ego break, and I'm just going to delve into the ego for just this one day. No.
Being an attack and get angry and call this person out and judge them as evil.
I'm going to do it this one time.
This really deserves it. This guy really deserves it.
And you know, I get that rush from it. I get that rush of adrenaline from it. So I'm just going to delve into it. Well, all right.
Jesus tipped over the tables after all of the money changers, so I'm going to get mad, and I'm going to dress this person down, put him in their place.
There's always tomorrow. I'll just do it tomorrow.
Well, wait a minute.
Tomorrow. Next lifetime.
But it says at different points, you aren't quite ready for this yet.
Unless you are.
So you're still going to trip up a little. Less so just fun. Hang in there with me. And I mean, you know, for sure. I mean, I trip up. It's like I'm really good. I have my timer. I do it all day. I'm doing it as joyful work. But I have to have an appointment with my lawyer. You know, and I get tripped up. I mean, I don't get tripped up like I used to, but you know, my mind goes into the ego, weird stuff, but I'm tender with myself. I'm saying I'm at lesson 178. I'm not at lesson 365, you know? I'm doing it slowly. I'm being undone.
But here's the difference, Barbara. You realize it. Most people are unconsciously going headlong into ego behavior and ego thought, and they don't even know it.
And trusting the ego thought, trusting the ego behavior, they don't even know it.
This is the way everybody else does it, so I must be right in, you know, blaming others for my troubles and on ad nauseum.
I'm just going to harvest the anger today so that I can get that benefit, and I'll go back to my spiritual work tomorrow.
Well, I'm not even saying that. I'm saying most people aren't studying the course. They don't even know that they're going into total headlong ego, just like a freight train going through a car trapped on the tracks. They're just barreling right down those tracks, not even
adding more suffering and darkness as they go. They don't even know.
As if there are people out there, but, you know, that's, we're talking.
There are until there aren't.
But at any rate, at least you're realizing, Barbara, that there is this process of dropping into ego land. That's a huge, huge step. Even realizing, oh, there I go again.
That's huge.
Wow. It's huge.
Just to be aware that there is a better way, that you could choose it, and you know how. You know, real quick, turn to page 495 in the text. We'll get back to you, Sundara. Hang in there. 495 in paragraph 4. Let's just read this little paragraph. Jacqueline, when you get there, I got your mute. Would you read for us paragraph 4 on page 495?
Okay. This course is easy just because it makes no compromise. Yet it seems difficult to those who still believe that compromise is possible. They do not see that, if it is, salvation is attack. Yet it is certain the belief that salvation is impossible cannot uphold a quiet, calm assurance. It has come. Forgiveness cannot be withheld a little. Nor is it possible to attack for this and love for that and understand forgiveness. Would you not want to recognize assault upon your peace in any form, if only thus does it become impossible that you lose sight of it? It can be kept shining before your vision, forever clear and never out of sight, if you defend it not.
Little touch on the absolute nature.
All right, I'm putting a bookmark on that.
Yeah, I thought you might. Little touch on the absolute nature. But it's not so hard, as Barbara is describing and discovering and teaching us as she goes along. You know, this is work, this Course in Miracles stuff, but man, it's healing my mind. I'm actually choosing peace in unpeaceful situations. I'm able to let stuff go because I want the truth and not feed on this chaos the world's trying to feed me. And I like it. And that's what an awakening feels like. That's what a miracle feels like. A miracle is a shift in perception from what you thought before toward the light, toward the truth. And the effect of a miracle is the ability to honestly let the darkness go. Not because you want to be happy. That's some other maneuver. The miracle's a shift in perception, so you can honestly let stuff go. Let go the anger thought. Let go the worry thought. You just let it go because it's no longer founded. It doesn't go anywhere. Oh, you're free. And then what follows your letting it, the stinking thinking thought go, is you breathe an easy breath in a holy instant. This is where you actually touch what the Course calls salvation. Because you've used your own mind, the same mind that was giving you trouble, released you from the trouble. Do you see how important that is? Miracle, forgiveness, holy instant. Nobody can take that away from you. What do you got, Ross?
And then what comes up from that is, it is not required that you have no impure thoughts. It's just required that you have none that you would keep.
Yes.
In other words, don't beat yourself up if you're not 100%. Just forgive yourself. But you didn't actually do anything, and move on and go, okay, well, yeah, I'm not 100% yet, but that's why I'm still in the world, because I'm not 100% yet. I still need the help of, let's call it, the Holy Spirit.
Okay, now some more good news. I don't have a quote for this, but you're not trying to solve and cure your ego. Entirely. The ego will remain the ego. The body remains the body. The world remains this active dream. What you are doing is you're solving your identity. You're correcting your identity. Here's what it sounds like. I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as God created me.
But wait, there's a different emphasis. I am still.
Right.
As God created me.
Since these are all meditations, you can really say you're being asked to be still. And then in your stillness, you discover the truth is waiting for you right there where it never left. How nice is that? Yes.
I mean, like when something comes at you, letting it
just be still and let it go by.
You learn, you learn to be still on the inside, even though on the outside you may be ducking or dialing the lawyer or calling the cops. But on the inside, you have shifted your identity from one who can be harmed. Your body can be harmed. I mean, the Course in Miracles' job isn't to make you bulletproof. So if you hear the gun going off, get out of the way. But there's no reason for you to be afraid. Even as you run to get out of the way quickly, you don't need to be afraid. That is not going to help. In fact, you're missing a big opportunity to be free. When you're threatened by anything of any type whatsoever, let's have Jesus tell us. Go to page 419. 419 in the text. This is in our toolbox, by the way. Because when the beep hits the fan, a paragraph like this can be helpful. Let's have Albert, would you unmute yourself and read for us the entirety of paragraph 11 on page 419?
When anything seems to you to be the source of fear, when any situation strikes you with terror and makes your body tremble, and the cold sweat of fear comes over it, remember, it is always for one reason. The ego has perceived it as a symbol of fear, a sign of sin and death.
Let me translate those last couple of words. Okay, symbol of fear, you got. A sign of sin, which means separation, which means you're alone, disconnected, and liable to just wither off all on your lonesome. That's what sin is in A Course in Miracles. And death is loss of any type whatsoever. Course teaches nothing real can be threatened, and nothing unreal exists, of course. And yet, somehow, we've come up with this idea of death and loss. So these are really potent sentences he's reading here. Albert, please continue.
Remember, then, that neither sign nor symbol should be confused with source, for they must stand for something other than themselves. Their meaning cannot lie in them, but must be sought in what they represent.
Okay, now I just want to stop there for a second and comment on what Sundari was celebrating earlier, that when you get this taste for what the truth means to you and how orienting and correcting and reliable the truth is, wouldn't you surrender everything toward whatever the truth is? I don't care what it is. There is a foundation that's built in you by making that decision alone. So remember that neither sign nor symbol should be confused with source. But the eyes you see things, you perceive, the ears you hear things through perception. You are participating in its meaning from an ego perspective. You would have to open a third eye in order to see its source. And that is what we do to become what we call enlightened or aware of motivations. To take a step back and let your Holy Spirit help you perceive, rather than your unholy spirit perceive, which will be a judgment, and that's what we call ego. So we're learning, even here in bodies and time and space, we're using time and space now for a different purpose, and that is to open up your mind now, even though you're completely addicted to being in a body. Now we can use this situation to restore your power and more. Albert, please continue.
Their meaning cannot lie in them, but must be sought in what they represent. And they may thus mean everything or nothing, according to the truth or falsity of the idea which they reflect.
Okay, that sentence, they must mean everything or nothing, this is a huge gift. That kind of sentence you can take into meditation. And let me just give you a quick little, Eckhart Tolle gave me a sentence that it said this. It said, I is either, that's that one letter, is at once either the very largest concept that your mind could handle, or that one letter is the very smallest thing you could behold. I. You see, it can mean everything or it can mean nothing, depending on which eyes you know, what perspective you see it. And Barbara was describing, well, she's changing her perspective with the Course in Miracles lessons. They're shifting her. They're moving the way she looks at things. They're empowering her to choose peace and to change her perspective as she sees things. She doesn't feel like judging so much anymore because she's starting to have more compassion. Things like this happen when you do these workbook lessons. You understand what's behind everything, even the hatred. There's something behind the hatred that's not hate. So, could mean everything, could be nothing, depending on how you look at it. Albert, please continue.
And they may thus mean everything or nothing according to the truth or falsity of the idea which they reflect. Confronted with such seeming uncertainty of meaning, judge it not. Remember the holy presence of the one given to you to be the source of judgment. Let me read that again. Remember the holy presence of the one given to you to be the source of judgment. Give it to him to judge for you and say, take this from me and look upon it, judging it for me. Let me not see it as a sign of sin and death, nor use it for destruction. Teach me how not to make it an obstacle to peace, but let you use it for me to facilitate its coming.
Nice. Thank you, Albert. Well done. Okay, that's how you wrangle the beep storm in your life and keep the truth coming. Let you see through, see past the veil, take a look past all what the ego is putting up to you and see through it and use it with your holy mind. Sundari, can you remember what you wanted to say?
Oh, yeah, because I never got out of it.
Okay, well, good, bring it.
I fell in a crack.
Okay.
An uncomfy crack.
Okay. And
somehow all of this is describing it. And it was sort of a nice thing when I thought of it in the honesty passage. There was a time I was with, the monastery in Utah. Okay. And somebody was in charge of me. And to me it felt abusive. And I wrote to David and said, I won't be coming to any more of these programs as long as this person could be in charge of me. And since then I haven't. But what was amazing, what he sent back to me was saying, he's just so, I don't know. He's the most uniform person I know in people. Oh. Out of any of the teachers I've met.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. Yeah.
He is uniform. And so what he wrote back to me was much like this honesty passage. He said, it's very rare that someone believes, says, does, and thinks in alignment, and acts in alignment. You know, all of that's in alignment. It was like this compliment or something, you know, and it was really, it was like, whoa, what an answer. And he ended up coming and presenting at my place and stuff, but I still haven't gone back there or, you know, where I might get that. But when we're reading this passage, I feel like I'm in a crack because over and over and over something, you know, and I could see where it comes from in my life patternings that I might call abuse manifests randomly, ridiculously, attached to nothing, from people I don't even know. It's just like, boom, there it is. You know, I go to get gas. The gas station attendant says, I'm taking down your license and reporting it to the police because you're on the cell phone. I mean, it's like, this is actual. And it's just like, whoa. And I know I create my own reality. And there's a place I'm stuck seeing the truth. I mean, I feel it because it's not like those things don't impact me. And I start just what it's saying right here in the section we just, you know, I see it as a sign of sin and death, you know, it's an obstacle to peace. And it's not like I haven't been working with it forever, really. And it's, I don't even know. I just know I'm caught in a crack. That's all I know.
I'm going to go to Ross's statement. You see yourself caught in a crack, and that is helpful. Without any tools, you would just describe your truth as what you now know as a crack, but you wouldn't even know you were in it. It was just a crack. A crack is a narrow thing you cannot be in. So it's good. You know, there's another way.
I do.
I'll tell you. And the workbook is designed lesson by lesson to help you not be addicted to that crack. You bet. Jacqueline.
I don't know if this relates. I don't know. For some reason, this came up for me with what you were sharing, Sundari, but I have a particular thing that keeps coming up for me too, which I have a lot of, I just become enraged. It doesn't have to do with other people. It has to do with actually my, anyway. So I had it happen. You know, I started out with a lot of peace and a wonderful meditation that I ended up, that rage just came up so big, and I injured myself as a result. Oh my gosh. So I've been really, you know, I use this what we're reading on 419. I say this every day. I don't know how many times, because anything that comes up, I turn it over to the Holy Spirit so I can be shown. And I usually am given, you know, some ideas and some thoughts and some reflections on it. So I was wondering, what is this that comes up? It's when I drop things and I can't find things, I can't remember. It's like this rage I have against, it's almost like towards myself, I thought. But, you know, today I, in my meditation or in my, you know, going inward, I had an image of when I was pretty young, like 8 or 9, being on the other side of the wall. And I knew about flipping the bird. And I actually had to hold my 2 fingers down to do it because I, you know, and I to my mother, and I was going, F you, to my mother. I was so, and I saw that image, and I feel like that's what I'm doing to God. And that's what my rage actually is like, almost F you, God. It's a rage at God, like something about you know, you could say it's abandonment or, why would God let me be here in this, you know, whatever it is. I won't even try to go into any explanation, but I got it. So I'm wondering if, I don't know, I just wanted to share that. I felt like that was a good thing to see.
it is perhaps the largest, most, the deepest, largest confusion that humankind has is their definition of God.
Because God has nothing to do with it. And then I thought, oh my gosh, I'm, you know, flipping off God. And I thought, well, God can't see it anyway, so I don't have to really worry about it. It's just my pain or my anger to be healed, to be let go of, to be seeing a way to see peace in place of this.
also, you did not make gravity. Gravity's pulling constantly and seems to have taken that object out of your hands and made it fall. You would have preferred to simply hold on to it. And yet the forces that be thrust it to the ground. That can mean everything or it can mean nothing. But there is a lesson here. There is a chance for your Holy Spirit to go back with you to the object falling out of your hands and go with you on that journey rather than the ego. And you don't have to wait for it to happen again. You can take it with you into meditation and just watch the whole thing happen again. But this time take the Holy Spirit with you and try to step back and watch and see what is actually going on. The ego will point out loss and victimhood. The Holy Spirit will point out empowerment. Depending on how open you are to letting the Holy Spirit walk with you through situations in your life is how much empowerment you will receive, but you will receive empowerment. The ego disempowers by showing that you're vulnerable and likely to have loss, fallible. The ego will show that, but the Holy Spirit can take the exact same situation, no modification, no averaging necessary, take the exact same thing and have the Holy Spirit show you. You can ask a question like this: what is this for? How can I use this for my understanding of what's actually happening? What is true? But you have to not know the answer. You know, you can't say, Holy Spirit, I know what you're going to say. You have to really open your mind. You have to really go still. Barbara.
I just want to come back to the structure of the course. And I think that it's really impeccably put together.
Wow.
And I think that just my experience so far is that if you just follow it, the undoing happens. It's not even really with a whole lot of effort. It's just follow the structure of the course and do what it's asking you to do. And then, Sundara, you say you fell in a crack. And one of the things that I'm thinking as I go through this and I'm feeling myself being undone, and it's very rewarding and slow, but rewarding, and, you know, I'm following the structure of the course. I have a question for you, Andrew. How many times have you done the lessons? Have you done them more than once?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that is my assumption, that the course is structured perfectly, but that you have to keep recycling through it.
It's written so that there's a whole different set of lessons, 365 of them.
Right.
After I've done them, I come back again, and the next time through, it's like, wow, this is even more. And then it's written with levels of awakening waiting for me each time through.
And I'm getting that by weeks ago, I said, I finally finished the text and it took me forever. And when I got to the end of the text, I thought, now I'm ready to read the text.
Yeah.
you know, now I'm ready to start it anew.
Yeah.
And it is totally anew.
Totally.
Yeah. And so, you know, to me, it's like meet your lifelong partner.
Yeah. And then you look at those miracle principles that were somewhat confusing the first time you read them, and suddenly they're like purposeful. They're rich. They're gifts, jewels. Right.
So I think that when you fall in a crack, you know, look at how you're following the structure. It's almost like it's all you need.
It's receive the gift, you know, to take the hand and let the hand pull you out.
Exactly. And that
well said. Hey, look at page 462, and that's our reading for tonight, and we'll touch on that just a bit. Look at 462, paragraph 4. And Emily, I got your mute. Would you read that for us?
Sure. The army of the powerless is weak indeed. It has no weapons. And it has no enemy. Yes, it can overrun the world and seek an enemy, but it can never find what is not there. Yes, it can dream it found an enemy, but this will shift even as it attacks, so that it runs at once to find another and never comes to rest in victory. And as it runs, it turns against itself, thinking it caught a glimpse of the great enemy who always eludes its murderous attack by turning into something else. How treacherous does this enemy appear, who changes so it is impossible even to recognize him.
Welcome to living life as an ego. Shifting and changing and chaotic, and you think you got it, you don't. What we're talking about is much more immediate than chasing an enemy and trying to win. The power of your mind in an instant, the instant, when you remember to be vigilant, is what we're talking about. And what the whole workbook is leading you to stumble upon, and the definition of salvation in A Course in Miracles, is that you discover that you did this to yourself, and you can give it up as easily as you made it up, but you must become very present to do so. You can't do it in the future. You can't do it in the past. We have only a couple of minutes. Turn to page 64 in the text. Let's have Jesus continue on the lecture on this topic. Help us further understand that particular paragraph before we quit the meeting for tonight. Look at page 64. Look at wonderful paragraph 8. And Marion, are you there? Would you read for us paragraph 8?
Sure.
Wonderful.
Have you really considered how many opportunities you have had to gladden yourself and how many of them you have refused? There is no limit to the power of a son of God. But he can limit the expression of his power as much as he chooses. Your mind and mine can unite in shining your ego away, releasing the strength of God into everything you think and do. Do not settle for anything less than this and refuse to accept anything but this as your goal. Watch your mind carefully for any beliefs that hinder its accomplishment and step away from them. Judge how well you have done this by your own feelings, for this is the one right use of judgment. Judgment, like any other defense, can be used to attack or protect, to hurt or to heal. The ego should be brought to judgment and found wanting there. Without your own allegiance, protection, and love, the ego cannot exist. Let it be judged truly. And you must withdraw allegiance, protection, and love from it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. That is like taking a pill to get better. That paragraph. Look how specific it is. Look how much of a promise there is in it. Look how confident the author is in your power to do this. Look at sentence 4, right in the middle of the paragraph. Do not settle for anything less than this. This is Ross's 100%. And refuse to accept anything but this as your goal. 100% your goal. Yes, you'll slip, but here comes another sentence, right? It's in the next sentence, but I'm going to preview it with this idea. Course in Miracles is teaching you that you're not what you appear to be, right? It's teaching you that your whole ego and your fascination with your body in this world is not actually true. It's as real as any movie you've ever seen. Actors, plot, colors and story, but it's not true. See, this is what you're learning with A Course in Miracles. The biggest lesson you'll ever learn is that only the truth is true and nothing else is true. What you end up with A Course in Miracles in any spiritual path is an awakening of away from your false identity and a dawning of your true identity. There's no comparison. There's no comparison of the seeming truth of an illusion compared to the depth of the truth itself. But everybody here is drawn to this beyond the cartoon that is this body you're living. You're drawn to it. In this book, I haven't found a better guide that's found its way into this dimension. Look at the next sentence. Look at the next sentence. It says, watch your mind carefully for any beliefs that hinder its accomplishment, choosing the truth, choosing happiness, and step away from them. Step away from any contraction, small thoughts, anger thoughts, judgment thoughts, thoughts of loss of any type. Step away from them. And of course, judge how well you've done this. Judge how well you're doing your Course in Miracles lesson. Judge how well you're handling the difficulty in your life. How? By your own feelings. Wow, this is great. Now we've got feedback. Now we're told not only what to do, we're told how to do it, but now we're told, did we do it? How do you measure if you did it? Did you choose peace? Are you feeling peaceful? Is calling the sheriff or the lawyer or even ending a relationship with somebody who's a drain in your life seems so opposite of what a loving person would do to end a relationship, right? But if you don't have any measure for your success except for your peace, your own peace. It's a wonderful guide. It's the only guide you need. Judge how well you've done this by your own feelings, for this is the one right use of judgment. Judgment, like any other defense, can be used to attack or to protect. It depends on whose hands it's in. The ego attacks with judgment, and the Holy Spirit will protect with judgment. But the Holy Spirit does the judgment. To hurt or to heal, you bet. The ego should be brought to judgment and found wanting there. Without your own allegiance, protection and love, the ego cannot exist. Let it be judged truly, and you must withdraw all allegiance and protection and your small little idea of love. It's just like, how much do you love your drug? if you're an alcoholic or you're sugar, if you're a sugar addict or you're gambling, if you're a gambling addict, there's a small L love for it, right? Everything you're attracted to, like any addiction, but eventually you see past it and you fall out of love. Yes, Emily.
Just wanted to clarify about something around the peace is our measure of success, because when I step out of an unhealthy pattern and I really get away from it and out of that crack and rut, it doesn't feel good necessarily. I feel like I'm scared. Like, wait, this is uncomfortable. This is foreign. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. It could be dangerous out here without that so-called false security. And so initially it's not really peace, but
yes, go ahead.
With practice, it really does get better for me. It has.
I would task you in that moment when you're wondering if you're at peace to get present and say, do I believe what I'm doing will bring me peace? And your answer is yes, because that's why you did it. You did it because you somehow, somewhere, you're biting the bullet, and this is the better way to get out of this difficult situation. And some strength came to you. That was your peace. And then the brain comes in with the average ego adding fear and doubt and these typical, the brain now does that. But if you were able to stop for a moment and find out, do I still believe? Yes, you still believe. Yes, the peace was there from the beginning when you made that decision to leave the chaos. And by the way, it was probably dishonesty of some sort you were involved in. You by yourself or by the other person, but still, it was an inconsistency, and that's why you wanted to stop it. And that's always, you're always going to go for alignment with the honesty we talked about earlier. And that brings a type of peace you can't miss. Yes, 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 you bet. It approves itself over time. Always does, always does. Okay, we're running over time, but let's go for it. Jacqueline.
Just quickly, I wanted to say that while I was jumping around because I injured myself cursing, I thought, can I really believe that I am still as God created me? I abide in with God. So that's at least came to my mind.
Yeah, nice.
Can I know that, you know, so.
There is an awakening. That's what awakening is. The ego character in the body that can stub its toe doesn't awaken, but your mind gives up on the ego as its identity. Ego has a body which has stubbed toes. You do not. Somehow, some way, in your awakening, you start to identify with this spirit. Lesson 97. It's a short title. I am spirit. Lesson 97. He's like, Jesus is going along 98 lessons and says, you know what? You need to realize this. And he gives you that lesson. thank you everybody for studying A Course in Miracles with me. This is a good thing that we do. It is healing our mind, and more than just your mind. You are cooperating with much more than you can see with your eyes as you do this work. All minds are connected, and it's a really, really wonderful, wonderful course that you are contributing to. Thank you. Let's do it again next week.